Heart Glass, and this is It's All About Food. Good afternoon. It's April 25th, 2012. And have we all recovered over Earth Day this past weekend? It was a great weekend for me. It was my birthday, and I really appreciate all the lovely messages I got from people. And if you sent me one, thank you very much. It was really very fun. The thing is, though, that even though we celebrate Earth Day once a year, it really needs to be every day. This is our home, planet Earth, and we really need to pay attention to everything that's going on and take care of it, because this is it, you know, until we figure out how to populate other planets. We need to take care of this home. And we talk about that quite a bit on this show, the environment and treatment of animals and the health of everyone that's degrading, mostly because we're not really taking care of ourselves, are we? But today, especially for the first part of the show, I want to concentrate on the fun part of food and how it's really easy, it's delicious, it's fresh, and once you come over to the healthy food side, all the benefits start streaming in. You get all this energy, you start looking hot, and at the same time, you're walking gently on the planet. And it's easy. It's just a win-win all around. So that's why I love talking about food, especially delicious, healthy food, and that's what we're going to be doing right now. I'm going to bring on my first guest, Amber Shea Crawley, and she's got a lovely new book out. I don't really want to call it a cookbook per se because it's mostly raw recipes. She's a linguist, chef, and author specializing in healthful vegan and raw food. Known for her flexible recipes and friendly voice, she was classically trained in the art of gourmet living cuisine at the world-renowned Matthew Kennedy Academy, graduating in 2010 as a certified raw and vegan chef. In 2011, she earned her nutrition educator certification at the Living Light Culinary Arts Institute, and you can find her at her blog at almostveganchef.com. Welcome to It's All About Food, Amber.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
I'm doing well. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, and
okay.
I hope everyone else can. Okay, well, thanks for writing this book, and I enjoyed reading it, and I'm going to enjoy getting to know it better as I make more of the recipes.
That's great.
Let's just learn a little bit about you. It's always interesting, I find. I'm going to back up a little. You know, raw food has had its trendy moments in the last decade with celebrities getting all excited about it and promoting it, and it's really just food like we're supposed to be eating it before we got totally bent out of shape with all this high-tech processing of food. It's crazy.
It's true. I think a lot of people think that raw food is overly complicated and takes a lot of time to prepare, but if you do it right, I mean, a lot of things lead to less preparation than cooked food. It's really easy just to make a smoothie or a salad or juice or blend together some nuts and dried fruit for dessert. I mean, a lot of it is surprisingly instant.
Yeah. So what was your journey? How did you get to getting interested in preparing raw food?
Well, I've been vegan for a few years since early 2008.
Okay, now you're coming in and out.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Can you hear me okay?
No.
Uh-oh.
Oh, now you're better.
Better now?
Yes.
Okay. Let me know if that happens again.
I will. Okay.
Okay. So I was saying I've been vegan since 2008, and I originally got into veganism for health reasons, and so it just kind of was a natural progression for me to, you know, eat fewer and fewer of the processed fake meat products and things like that and just keep bringing in more fresh foods. And I think things really turned around for me when I first had a chance to eat at Matthew Kenny's restaurant in Oklahoma City. And I just grew in love, head over heels in love with raw food. And I knew that was so good. And I wanted to take everything from then on out.
Yeah, I remember going to Pure Food and Wine here in New York City when it first opened, it was really exciting. That was his restaurant at the time. It isn't anymore, but really beautiful place. And one of the things I found about Raw Kitchens, I remember getting a tour of one in California. It's not open anymore, but at the time, this was in the 90s. Compared to, if anybody's ever had a chance to go into a restaurant kitchen, even though there's a lot of regulations to keep them clean, you see all different kinds of stains all over the place and oil-coated things, and not in a Raw Kitchen. Raw Kitchens are clean.
Yeah, I agree. I saw that at the Matthew Kenny OKC restaurant. I've never seen a kitchen like that before. I mean, it was completely open to the dining room,
mm-hmm.
and people, I mean, it wasn't hot and steamy, and people weren't just rushing around and clanging pans and things like that. It was really calm and really just enjoyable to be around, which regular kitchens aren't always that way.
Yeah, I think if more people saw what was going on behind the scenes, they might even be more interested in eating this way.
Yeah, very possibly. Everything is very clean, and it's easy to see how that can get translated into really clean, fresh food.
And when it's clean in the kitchen, it's going to be clean when you eat it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay. So I'm just curious, what is it like training at these different places? You trained with Matthew Kennedy, and then you went on to the Living Light Institute.
Mm-hmm.
How I guess you haven't had training in other culinary institutes, but I'm just kind of curious what it's like to go to through a curriculum like that.
It was like being on a playground all day every day at the Matthew Kenny Academy. It's just, that was heaven for me to be around, you know, just buckets of fresh raw ingredients and produce and just everything was, it's what I liked to do in my spare time. You know, I just like to mess around in the kitchen and play around and create things and try recipes. And I got to do that for several hours a day for several weeks at a time. So it was not at all, I felt no pressure. I mean, there's not like big exams or anything like that. It's just every day going in the kitchen and creating new things and experimenting and kind of learning to find your own voice with food and, you know, learn how to deliver your own flavors and how to make your own.
You know, we see so much crazy stuff on television. I have to put a disclaimer here because I don't watch very much television, but I am aware that there are a lot of reality shows and a lot of them are involved with food, and you see so much stress in the kitchen and the competition and things getting done on time, and I really don't like the idea of combining food with stress.
Oh, exactly. I think food, a lot of times for me, it's therapeutic to go and take my time popping ingredients and putting something together. And yeah, the high octane, high stress environment of things like that just never appealed to me at all.
Yeah, and surely if you're working in a restaurant, there's going to be a certain amount of focus. But I think food preparation, especially at home, it can be zen-like if you know what you're doing and get in that mode, and that's the way it should be.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see. Let's jump into this lovely little book here. Okay. One of the things I wanted to talk about is you have a whole section on hummus and the difference.
Yes, I do.
Excuse me?
I said, yes, I do.
Yeah. And hummus, it's interesting how popular hummus has become in this country. I'm not sure when it really got a turn in momentum. In, I mean, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I'm not quite sure, but there was a time when no one was eating hummus, and now it's everywhere.
Yeah, I don't think there's a bar in my town that doesn't even have hummus on the bar menu, so it's everywhere.
Yeah, and it's usually a very safe thing for people like vegetarians when they're going to some mainstream event. Very often you can find hummus and then you go, oh, there's something for me to eat.
Yeah, that's true.
And now there are so many different ways to make hummus. So I want to, it's funny because I'm thinking if First thing I want to say so many things at the same time. It's always very difficult for me. My tongue starts getting all twisted. hummus, I don't know if you know this, but the origin of hummus or what it means is from Arabic and from Hebrew. Hummus means chickpeas.
Right, yeah.
And we've gone quite a long way with what we do with hummus. I mean, some of them that we call hummus don't even contain chickpeas anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I guess nowadays it can just be any puree.
Any kind of schmear or vegetable pate or whatever you want to call it, which is pretty amazing. I remember I've been to Israel a number of times, and I think it was back in the 80s, the first time I was there, I went to a restaurant and I was really hungry, and hummus wasn't really that popular in the United States at the time, but it was on a menu, and I remember not being sure how it was going to be offered. I now know how it's traditionally offered. It's just spread on a plate with, you know, maybe you get some pita bread. But I asked the server, you know, how is it served? I wanted to know if it came with any salad or anything, and she said, hummus? Hummus is hummus. And it's just been like an ongoing kind of thing with me ever since. And hummus is really just hummus, but it isn't anymore. Hummus is many, many different things today.
That's true.
And so you have a lot of different hummus recipes, and you start with three basic ones.
Mm-hmm.
One is
Go ahead.
Yeah, you have the traditional hummus. And okay, one of the things that's great about this book is that it's flexible raw recipes. Mm-hmm. So you're going to find some things that were cooked in here.
That's true.
That's true. We'll get back to hummus, but why did you do that?
Well, I know that a lot of times when I hear people explain why they don't eat raw food or why they haven't gotten into it, they name things like, well, I don't have a dehydrator, I don't have a high-speed blender, I don't know where to get all those fancy superfood ingredients, or I can't afford them, and things like that. And I wanted to show people that adding more raw foods and fresh foods to your life doesn't have to be, you know, an all-or-nothing experience. I mean, I give people directions to warm something up on a stove or to heat it up in the oven, because the point at the end of the day is that you're getting more raw, unprocessed, fresh ingredients into your diet. And if you heat those up a little bit and kill some enzymes, that's okay. It's still great food.
Right. The thing is, we've somehow lost this knowledge of how to prepare food.
Yeah.
And any way that can get people back into the kitchen making food is a good thing.
I agree.
I'm going to get back to the hummus in a minute, but I want to talk about some other things. So I've been a vegan for a long time, and I've always been on this major health path, and I think it was the Living Light Institute. I was invited to speak in Costa Rica in 2004 at a conference they were having. It was a glorious thing because I camped outside. People could stay in little bungalows if they wanted to, or you could camp. And it was a week-long event, and Sherry Soria was there and a number of other people preparing all of this wonderful food. And I had not eaten raw food before, and I decided after that conference that I would eat all raw food. And I did that for 2 years. And and it was just a great learning experience, because once, you know, you eliminate certain things, you need to ramp up on other things. And it's true of any time you eliminate certain things from your diet.
Yeah, it challenges your creativity, I think.
And it's great to shift your focus and challenge yourself. But I always found it humorous where people were saying, oh, I'm 65% raw, I'm 85% raw, I'm, you know, 72% raw. And thinking, how do you figure those things out, you know?
Yeah, there's calculations for that that I know of that's accurate.
It was really kind of nutty, pun intended. So I really appreciate in your book that you're really just introducing people to lots of luscious, creative ways to use primarily raw food, and not to really get all wrapped up with if you're using a few cooked ingredients. It's just good.
Yeah, or even if you can, you have access to all kinds of ingredients, or maybe you even have a dehydrator or something like that, and you can prepare fully raw food. Maybe you don't have a family that wants raw food. Maybe they want something warm, or maybe they want some pasta or some beans added to it, and I don't see any reason why you can't combine a raw dish with a non-raw ingredient.
Right. Okay, so back to the hummus. So you have these three great recipes. One's the classic chickpea hummus, and the secret ingredient, if anyone doesn't know, is tahini. Anything with tahini is incredible.
Yeah, tahini on its own is great.
Yeah. So you have the classic one with the chickpeas, and then you have this nice zucchini hummus, which instead of the chickpeas, you use raw zucchini.
Yeah, that was, I don't remember the first time I had it prepared that way or the first time I tried that, but I was skeptical because I don't love raw zucchini on its own, and but I knew that it was, it's a very mild flavored vegetable, and it works really well as a palate for something like hummus. And when you puree it with a stronger, more assertive ingredient like tahini, you kind of, the zucchini kind of lets the tahini do the talking.
Well, you know, few people that garden, I always hear when zucchini's in season, they don't know what to do with it. There's just too much of it. And this would be a great thing, a great recipe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hear that, too.
And then there's the richer version, which is a hummus that instead of using the chickpeas, you're using cashews and macadamia nuts. Now, that just sounds too gooey, too amazing.
It's very rich. That's actually the first way I had raw hummus at Matthew Kearney's restaurant, and it was, I expected it to be incredibly heavy and, just kind of too much, but it worked really nicely.
You know, I appreciate that you're not using a sprouted chickpea in your hummus, any of your recipes.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that personally.
It's, you know, I've had it, and unless you drown it in tons of olive oil and some kind of salt, it doesn't taste very good.
Yeah, I agree.
So, good for you. Yeah, and then there's all kinds of theme and variations, which are really nice. Red pepper hummus, mushroom hummus, yummy, 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 sun-dried tomato pesto. Lots of really good variations here.
That's probably why hummus is my favorite food, is because it's such a, you can do anything you want with it. I mean, there's no limit.
And you should, because, and as you know, there's lots of good things in sesame seeds. That we make tahini from.
Yeah, lots of calcium, decent amount of fiber.
Yeah, vitamin E, I think, is in sesame seeds. Is it vitamin E? Yeah, I don't really think about what's in my food because I know it's all good. But, you know, occasionally I like to highlight things because people seem to think they need to know what's going on nutritionally.
Yeah.
Which is really a silly thing. The idea is that these kinds of diets based on fresh, whole foods, you don't have to know the science. It's easy. Just eat lots of wonderful, colorful foods, and you're going to win.
Yeah, you really don't need to count anything. I mean, I think the great thing about raw food, whole foods in general, but raw food specifically, is that it really fills you up and it tells your body when to stop in a way that I haven't experienced with cooked food. For me, I could, you know, keep eating a bowl of never-ending pasta, but I couldn't eat raw pasta nearly to that degree.
That's the magic of fiber.
Yeah.
And nature did that intentionally.
Right.
So that we don't eat too much. Okay, so for me, somebody who's really involved in food and healthy food, I'm pretty familiar with most of the things you talk about in the book. There's one ingredient, though, I want to talk a little bit about, and that's Irish moss.
Oh, yes.
I actually have a jar of Irish moss in my refrigerator that I probably bought 5 or 6 years ago and have not used very much of, and I'm embarrassed to say this because I always tell people to move the food out of their refrigerators and don't keep stuff for a very long time.
Yeah. Luckily, that seems to last pretty well. I don't know if it'll last years, but...
I know, but I just never really got into it. And so tell me what I can do with Irish moss and why I want to use it.
Well, First of all, I want to tell people that I always use that only as an optional ingredient because I know it's unfamiliar and it can be tough to track down, or depending on where you buy it, you may not want to pay for it, what they're charging. So I don't ever use that as a required part of a recipe. But I have found that it's an amazing addition in many different ways. You can use it for people who are fat sensitive. I don't really like the idea of limiting dietary fats, but I can understand sometimes why people would want to cut out a little of the fat in like a, you know, a cashew cheesecake that's got tons of nuts and coconut oil in it. So you can replace a portion of any type of blended or pureed nuts in a recipe with Irish moss, and it gives the recipe the same amount of body, but it makes it just a little lighter.
Right.
And it does the same things for raw breads, which I actually learned that from Russell James. He was my instructor at the Matthew Kenny Academy, and he makes a killer garlic bread that uses Irish moss blended into it, and it makes the bread really, I mean, fluffy. There's no better word. It's a really fluffy, light, almost spongy quality to it, and that's awesome for raw food because that's hard to achieve.
Right, because usually the raw breads are really dense.
Yeah, dense and flat and almost more like, you know, wimpy crackers or something like that.
So I guess it's like a foam maybe when you mix it with water, and then when it gets dehydrated it keeps that airiness.
Yeah, I think so. When you blend it, it turns into kind of a gel. And then when you add that to a recipe, whether it's a dessert or a smoothie or a bread or something like that, it, especially if you refrigerate it afterward, it thickens even more. And so it gives, yes, more body and more texture to whatever recipe you're doing.
Okay, so another ingredient that I don't use very often, well, I don't ever use it, so let's talk about it, and that's all of the raw cacao products, raw cacao powder, cacao nibs, cacao butter.
Mm-hmm.
Does it taste like chocolate?
It does. It tastes more chocolatey than chocolate does in a way sometimes. I mean, raw cacao powder is very strong.
It's great for dark chocolate lovers because it's got the cookies.
Okay, I'm losing you here. I'm not exactly sure why.
Uh-oh.
Oh, you're back. You're back. Very good.
Okay.
You like discipline.
So I was saying raw cacao is great for, like, dark chocolate lovers because it's a very strong chocolate flavor. And the cacao nibs, too, if you're a true chocoholic, then they're great because it's just like chewing on little crunchy bits of chocolate. To me, it's what chocolate should taste like. It shouldn't be over roasted and combined with, you know, milk powders and fillers and stuff like that. So I like it.
Okay. So I'm not exactly sure how it's made, but it's not roasted.
Right. Yeah.
It's a raw form.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think I might have had it in a dessert here and there, but I've never really ventured out and used it.
It's worth looking into.
Okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to try that because it's all about food, and I love variety. Why not?
Exactly.
Okay, so tell me, we just have a few more minutes. What's your favorite in this book? Do you have a favorite?
I have a few favorites. It's hard to pick, but I would say my favorite recipe in the whole book is probably my most popular recipe, period, and that's the famous 5-Minute Blondies in the dessert chapter.
Is that the one you won the award for?
No, it's the caramel fudge brownies are the one that I won the Hot Raw Chef contest with, and that's in the dessert chapter, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I would say, is a close second in my favorite desserts, but I love the brownies, blondies, the bar types of desserts. Those are just so low maintenance but easy. I mean, you know, you make cookies, you have to form the cookies. You make a cake or a pie, you have to make the crust and the filling. But with bars or brownies, you just make everything and you press it into a pan and you're done. And I love that.
You know, I'm glad that I'm looking at your book because I used to make a lot of these things and I've kind of gotten out of the habit of it, but these raw cookies, these raw treats, which are just a combination of nuts and dried fruit, are the best desserts you possibly could have. They're good for you, and they're easy,
mm-hmm.
and they're just so delicious.
Yeah, they're good enough for you that I like to tell people that you can eat one for breakfast and not really feel bad about it.
Right. I'm going on a trip, and I'm thinking I should probably make a few of these and take them on the plane with me.
Yeah, good idea.
Really good fuel.
Yes, very.
Okay, well, Amber, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food, and I wish you great success.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, and let's just get everybody to eat their vegetables, huh?
Agreed.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.